Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Today is June 17, 2015. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 17,935, the NASDAQ at 5,064, and the S&P at 2,100. A couple weeks ago, I did a show on cash flow management and how one of the biggest expenses we have is our mortgage. So tonight, I have invited a guest to discuss the mortgage approval process with tips that start as early as high school. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Judy Ann is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you could still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, we're discussing the mortgage approval process and understanding all the relevant issues related to that and tips to help you before and during to help you through it. My guest this evening is Steve Stelzman of The Mortgage Company. Steve has been helping Lehigh Valley homebuyers finance properties for more than 29 years. He is licensed as a mortgage loan officer. Currently, he is the branch manager and operating partner at The Mortgage Company in Allentown. Steve works with homebuyers to customize a mortgage financing that meets their goals. He's helped over 5,000 homeowners finance their homes in the Lehigh Valley over the last 29 years. He has earned the trust and respect of the local real estate community as the go-to mortgage guy that will always do what's best for the client. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Well, thank you, Lori. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming on. It was an interesting story how Steve and I got together after the show a couple weeks ago when the person had asked about HARP. I happened to get an email accidentally from Steve, and I reached out to him and said, hey, how come we haven't met? And we got together and talked, and he's an educator as I am, likes to educate people about the work that he's passionate about doing. So I'm really happy you're here. Do you want to tell people a little bit about yourself or your interest?
Well, like you said, I have a passion for educating the home buyer. So I like to, when somebody does call me, I'm looking to see what their goals are as opposed to, and what they're trying to do as far as home ownership, what they want their payment to be, how much cash they have to work with, and customizing a specific program that fits their needs.
Yeah, it makes a big difference mm-hmm. because I have said on the show before, sometimes when we talk about this, sometimes people will say, buy more than you can afford. And you're trying not to direct
people. We're trying not to direct anybody that because that sometimes may not be good advice.
Okay. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And I think it was Ed listening a couple weeks ago about the HARP. We're going to get to that towards the end of the show. So I hope you can hang on for that as well. If you can't, please give us a call and let us know. We'll push it up to the front of the show. But what I wanted to start with was asking Steve to kind of give us an overview of the mortgage approval process so that we as consumers can understand what we have to pay attention to. So before we break it down into all the details, because my listeners know I love details because that's part of making good decisions. So give us an overview of the mortgage approval process that we kind of have to pay attention to, the big pieces of it.
Okay. So depending upon when and if you got a mortgage, things have probably changed over the last few years. And just to give a little bit of a history, because I've been doing this for quite a bit of time, In 1990, our industry started to get a little more liberal and lightening up on the documentation that was required to get a mortgage approval. And up until around 2005, as we all know, we had some major problems. We had the largest foreclosure ratio in U.S. history. So in 2008, the U.S. government kind of stepped in and put some reform onto our industry. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there about exactly what that reform is. And if you listen to some newscasts and some media outlets, you'll hear things like it's harder to get a mortgage, or there you have to put 20% down. There's no more first-time homebuyer programs. And I want to hopefully today clarify some of those myths and kind of cut through the chase and kind of cut through get to the truth about what's actually going on from a approval process in the mortgage industry. So it is true that we are verifying information now. So when if you have adequate income to support a mortgage payment and you have a relatively good credit history, you can get a mortgage. There are first-time homebuyer programs that you could that are still available with little or no money down. The misconceptions that you need 20% down are false. You do have to verify your income. And prior to 2008, if you had a certain credit score, you did not have to verify income. You could show a pay stub, or there was no verification income loans at all. So we have changed that, and we're using tax returns now, and I think we'll go through the steps tonight as to exactly how we verify, what we verify, what we're looking for from a qualification perspective.
So in the past, you said if you had good credit, you didn't have to verify the income. You still would need some proof of it, but wouldn't have to go through extra steps to verify it.
Exactly.
So you were looking at credit, and you were looking at income, and then what are the other categories you're looking
for? Well, today really we're breaking it down into about probably four different sections. We're looking at income. We're looking at the credit and the credit history. We're looking at assets. Do you have enough money to purchase the home? Do you have enough money for the down payment and the closing costs? And then a side piece is the appraisal. We're also evaluating the property to make sure that it's when you move into the property, you're not going to have any large expenses as a result of having to put new roofs on or new heating systems because they don't work. Mm. So for income, we are looking for and I guess we should define income first of all. So income is anything that you report on a federal tax return or on a pay stub. So somebody who works under the table, does not report their income, that is not going to be able to show up as qualifiable income in a mortgage application. Okay, so we're looking at tax returns, we're looking at pay stubs, and we're extracting that income from those documents. We consider any type of fluctuating income. We will average over a period of time. But basically, and we'll get to this a little bit later on in the show, but we're looking at that the income supports the debt that you have, and that we have a ratio that we'll talk a little bit about later on, but that you're not getting into a house that you can't afford because that leads to bigger problems, foreclosures.
And, you know, as you said, some of this probably should have been done all along. And, it's very consistent with what we even do in financial planning. In financial planning, we're looking at how all the areas of someone's financial life come together. You know, their cash flow, their retirement savings, their income tax, how they all work together because one touches the other. So basically, that's what you guys are doing now too, to make sure that all of these pieces are working together so that people could be more successful in their home purchases as well. And, you know, we can't always anticipate downturns in the market or changes in someone's job, but with the information that you have available at the time, it's a way of trying to help people to be more successful in that mortgage, in home buying and in the mortgage approval process. Folks, if you have questions this evening, I'm very excited for this topic. I think we're going to learn a lot tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. It's not just about, you know, mortgages. It could be about refinancing as well. And then what's going on in the markets today as well. So Steve Stelzman from The Mortgage Company will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I might have forgot to say that at the top of the show tonight. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and accredited estate planner, trying to bring education about your financial choices to the folks in the Lehigh Valley. And I'm fortunate enough to bring guests from time to time to talk about topics that are important to you. And I have with me this evening Steve Stelzman of The Mortgage Company, also passionate about educating his clients about mortgages and getting them. So we want to talk about the mortgage approval process, add a few other things in this evening to try to help folks if they are going to be going through that or even perhaps a refinancing. Little tips that you can benefit from to help that. So first we're going to talk about the process, what the mortgage companies are looking for when they're going through that process, and then some of the things that you can do, take action to kind of help it. So, for example, one of the things we were just talking about is that years ago, they were only looking at credit reports and maybe not verifying income the way they used to, and now they're doing more with verifying income. And Steve had mentioned, you know, if you're getting paid money under the table, which, you know, none of us should be doing that, but if you were getting money under the table and you think you're quite clever, and then years later, you want to go apply for a mortgage, well, it's not so clever anymore. So the tip is, if you are someone who's going to be in the market for a home purchase, you're needing to build up credit and show your income and be able to verify that. So Steve, if we could talk let me give the phone number first, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, if you have any questions. So let's go over that income verification process just a little bit more, and then we'll drill down into what the purpose of looking at the assets is for, and the debt and credit and that kind of thing. So Okay. Let's talk a little bit more detail about the income.
So let's start by how we break up income into two separate categories, fluctuating and non-fluctuating. So a fluctuating income would be, as it states, where your income would adjust month to month. An example of that would be maybe somebody who has commissions or bonuses, somebody that's self-employed that takes different draws. A non-fluctuating income would be your traditional, I make $10 an hour, 40 hours a week at my job. Does not vary from week to week. Their paychecks are relatively the same every time they receive one. On a fluctuating income, our industry is required to average that income over 2 years. And then that gives us a perspective of what that person is actually, on average, taking home per month. Non-fluctuating incomes, we use the actual rate of earnings on the pay stub. And when we speak of earnings, we speak of gross earnings, earnings before your taxes are taken out, earnings before your medical insurance is taken out. And that's an important factor because I think that we get caught up in our industry, we're using a gross number, but to the consumer, to the client, to the first-time home buyer, it's important that they look at their net number. You know, the first thing that I tell everybody is to, you know, make a budget. Look at your net, what you take home, what your bills are, and where does an affordable mortgage payment fit into that picture? If we use, obviously, the gross number is higher, we're probably going to qualify for a little bit higher than you may want to spend. So the first question that I ask everybody is, what do they want their mortgage payment to be? What I find is that 9 times out of 10, we will qualify somebody for a higher amount than they want that payment to be. So I think step one is to figure out what you're comfortable with and then let your mortgage professional figure out what they're allowed to use. And tonight, when we're speaking of guidelines, we're actually, I kind of give you a little background. Everything that I speak about will be consistent, mostly consistent from any lender that you talk to, because we're all following guidelines that are set by the Federal National Mortgage Association, so that we are fair in how we treat people, that everybody has the same accessibility to mortgage lending. And quite frankly, those guidelines are also in play to prevent fraud, because as every industry, we have some people that are trying to take advantage of the system. So whether you're talking to me tonight, or you walk into your local bank and ask the question, the topics we're talking about should be relatively the same rules applying.
That's good to know. One other question I had when you mentioned about the fluctuating income is averaged over 2 years, and then you said with the W-2 or the pay stub, if it's a fixed income, are you looking at 2 years of pay stubs or 2 years of tax returns
No,
as well?
No, that's a good question. So if somebody earns, let's say they're at Walmart today, and they're at 40 hours a week at Walmart, and they are earning $10 an hour, and next week they go to Kmart and earn $12 an hour, we're going to use that $12 an hour. So if it's a fixed income, a non-fluctuating income, we could use what they're making. The only time we ever have to average or go back and do an average is when that income is fluctuating and has a history of fluctuation.
Okay, great. We have a caller on line one. We have Sandra from Bethlehem.
Uh-huh.
Sandra, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, hi. Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
I have a question. Okay. I'm married, but I'm separating.
Okay.
And I want to move out of the home that I'm in, but I don't want to rent. I love home ownership, so I want to go ahead and purchase again. Now, my name is not on the mortgage at all, but my name is on the deed.
Okay.
Now, I was told that I had to prove somehow or another, I don't know how, that I was separating, but also I would have to put down 20%. And it's like, 20%? That's really a lot of money, you know, for mm-hmm. someone, you know. So I want to verify, do you have to put down 20%, or can I put down 5% or 10%? Would I qualify?
Okay, let me see if Steve can take that.
So it's a good question, Sandra. So technically, you are not obligated to the loan because you're not on the mortgage.
No,
is that
not
correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So you potentially may not be eligible for some first-time homebuyer programs because technically you're an owner, even though you don't have a mortgage. You have owned a home or currently own a home. So you may be excluded from certain first-time homebuyer programs. But there are programs out there with less than 20% down for you that are available for you in your situation.
Okay,
maybe because of separation, but she may need to get legal advice.
Yeah, so now what a lender is going to ask for in a separation process is what's called a separation agreement, and this is an agreement between you and your spouse, or
yes.
You and your spouse, as to how the assets and what the future debt is going to look like for you.
Okay.
Going forward. Okay, so if you think about this from a lender's perspective, we need to figure out what you're going to be responsible for as a result of the divorce. Are you going to incur any child support or alimony? Are you going to
receive none? Nothing like that. No.
Right. Would you be so the separation agreement would outline if you're responsible for any debts, if you're going to receive any income. Who's going to be responsible for the real estate taxes that are assessed on the property?
Oh, okay.
So all those things are outlined in a separation agreement, and then that's what a lender is going to use to determine your debts and liabilities as a result of your pending separation. All right. Now, a separation agreement is a legal document prepared by an attorney, signed by both parties, recorded at the courthouse. So that's something that you may want to consult your attorney to start working on now. And
yes.
And obviously, it's an agreement between you and your spouse, so he's got to agree to the terms and conditions of it. But with that document, you would be eligible to go and purchase a home. I mean, provided that you qualify based on income and credit and assets and,
yes.
and other things, you know,
yes.
you know the normal
so
qualification process.
Not,
but
yeah.
but you're not held to the 20% rule. You could, if you qualify, you would qualify for other programs with less than a 20% down.
Okay.
Good.
Okay, Sandra.
Thank you
okay.
so much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Talk
All
to
right.
you. Okay,
okay.
Bye-bye. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back with Steve Stelzman from the mortgage company in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me in the studio this evening guest Steve Stelzman from the mortgage company. We're talking about the mortgage approval process, all of the input that goes into that, looking at income, credit, debt, and assets. And we're going to drill down into the details of that. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So we just talked, kind of got into a little bit of the income guidelines and verifying the income, Steve, how we're you're asking for tax returns, pay stubs, 2 years worth of fluctuating income, that type of thing to kind of verify income. Now, we also talked about, let me mention, though, from a financial standpoint, it's funny because quite often I'll tell people, they'll say, how long should I keep my documents? How long should I keep my papers? And I'm always shocked to hear people say, well, I don't have my tax return from last year. I'm like, what do you mean you don't have your tax return from last year? And people just must like to get rid of stuff. But keep copies of your tax returns and pay stubs. A lot of people don't keep pay stubs anymore. They're electronic. They don't go online. They've never seen their pay stub in 5 years. People should periodically print off those pay stubs for you.
Well, one of the biggest, that's a great point, because one of the biggest challenges we face in the industry right now is extracting the documentation from the client. You know, we're living in an electronic world. I don't get a pay stub. My pay stub is somewhere in the cloud, and if I want to get it, I have to go search it out, and I don't like that.
I have to find that website.
I got to find that website, the password, and it's a mess, and I understand it. And unfortunately, one of the things that came out of this reform was document. So we have to torture every one of our clients with getting all this documentation that they don't have. So if you're in the home buying or refinancing process, start collecting, start saving, create a file, or an electronic file, even a safe electronic file.
So that's good advice for Sandra, who just called, because if she's thinking about this, she should start paying attention to her pay stubs and her tax returns.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's great. So let's move on to assets. You mentioned that you're going to look at assets and the assets that people have. Now, why is that important?
Well, we want to determine that you have enough money for the down payment, the closing cost, and the taxes and the insurance. So if you get into, whether you get into a first-time homebuyer program or you get 20% down, when we figure out the amount of cash you need to purchase the property, we need to document that in the form of bank statements and prove that it's yours. Now, there are assets that we are allowed to use, that you're allowed to use to purchase a home, and then there's assets that we're not allowed to use. So an example, if you keep $5,000 under your bed and you're saving your dollars every day to purchase a home, and then you apply for a mortgage and you take that shoebox full of money and you walk it down to your bank and deposit it, that's a problem for us, because according to our guidelines, our federal guidelines, we have to verify where that money came from. And if you it's very hard to verify or document or create a paper trail if your money's in a shoebox and all of a sudden it appears in a savings account. And the government's concern with that is that is this illicit funds? Where was this money derived from? So when any lender's going to ask for 2 months bank statements for two reasons. First reason is to show that you have the available monies in that account to go to closing and pay for down payment and closing costs. The second reason is we're going to look for any large deposits. So if we see a large deposit, example, in my last example, that shoebox money going into a savings account, we're going to have to question that and ask where it came from. And if it's not one of your paychecks, then we're going to have to document where that money came from. And there are allowable good reasons to have large deposits. You can receive gift monies from parents. That's an acceptable large deposit that goes into the bank. We do have to document it. You could get bonus checks. You could sell an asset. You could
lottery winnings.
You can get married and deposit your wedding funds. But I just want to be clear, we're not saying that you can't have large deposits. We're just saying that if they appear on a bank statement, we do have to document the large deposits. So think of that ahead of time. You're preparing for your mortgage now. You're out looking for houses. If you're going to throw large sums of money into a savings account that's not your regular paycheck, then make sure you keep the documentation to support that deposit, because your lender is probably going to ask you for that.
That's great. I forgot to mention the phone number again when we came back from that last break. 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So assets you're looking at. So the income was to make sure that they could continue to make their payments on the mortgage. The assets is a further indication of, are they going to have the money kind of for the down payment and, you know, because that's a big chunk of money. That's not a cash flow issue. That's money they need today.
That's the money they need today. Yes.
Okay, so that's the assets. Anything else about the assets? Because we can go talk about debt.
Well, what I would say is save your bank statements. Once again, the documentation piece, most of us do not get that traditional bank statement mailed to us in the mail. It's either online or we don't get anything. So most banks now, if you have online services, do have that traditional bank statement in a PDF format that you can download and send to your lender, but some banks don't. So
amazing some people don't realize that statement is there because they're not used to viewing it that way.
Yeah,
I had a case recently where someone said, I don't get statements. I said, there's a statement there. You just have to know how to retrieve it.
It's you got to dig for it, but it's there. But it's buried somewhere.
Okay.
Usually.
So another step then, these are great tips tonight, Steve. So we want to make sure that folks have pay stubs, W-2s, tax returns, or
Bank statements
for the fluctuating income. For self-employed people, it might be bank statements as well, or their tax return.
It would be bank statements. Now, one of the probably the biggest sector of the market, if I want to use the word, got hurt in the reform, was the self-employed borrower. And let me give you an example of that, because you probably, it's a financial show, so you may have some business owners listening. So if you're when I say we have to use taxable dollars for income, let me give you an example. Let's say I own a pizza shop and my gross revenues are $300,000 a year, but I'm allowed to deduct from that legal deductions, my expenses, my rent. So I report to Uncle Sam every year that I make $100,000 a year. I, as a lender, we're only allowed to use the $100,000. So that pizza owner's accountant is doing everything they can to reduce his tax base. The problem with that is that when it comes to lending money, especially in the mortgage world, we're using the net number. We're using the number that you're actually paying taxes on. So it's a benefit to take the deductions, but it could come back and haunt you when you're trying to lend money, because on $100,000, you're going to have less buying power than on $300,000.
So if you're going to buy a home or a new business and you're a business owner, don't maybe write off the huge equipment expense, because your income's going to look lower. We are coming up on our halfway mark of the show. Paul, you called in. We're going to answer your questions when we come back from the break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call in live on air, as Sandra did earlier, or off air, as Paul has done. Paul, just hang on for the answers to those questions. We are talking with Steve Stelzman from The Mortgage Company. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me in this studio this evening, Steve Stelzman from The Mortgage Company. We are talking about the mortgage approval process and taking your phone calls live or off air, whatever your preference is. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And Steve, we have a call from Paul in Allentown, and he had two questions. And the first was, what do you do if the appraisal grossly undervalues the property?
Well, that's a good question, Paul. And in the market that we just came out of, this is not an uncommon problem because we hit a point from 2003 to 2007 where property values were increasing at 10-15% a year. So if you purchased in that market, your property value may have gone down in comparison to today's market. So there are some people out there that have purchased in that time frame. Maybe they didn't put a lot of money down, and now when they go to do the appraisal, their property is worth less. So here's what I can tell you. The appraisal process is a pretty scientific process where that appraiser is going out there and they're looking at comparable houses that have sold that are similar to yours, and they're making standard adjustments to try to make the comparables as equal to your property as they can and determining a value from that. So the only thing I could say is you may be able to ask, I'm not sure exactly where you're at in this process, but you may be able to ask your lender to do a second appraisal, get a second opinion. They may charge you for that, unfortunately. But I could tell you that doesn't always work. The comparables, the properties that they're using are probably the best ones that are out there. And sometimes there's not a whole lot you can do about that. As far as your second question, which is,
how do you handle a construction loan that converts to a mortgage?
So basically you're building the house, and money is being used to construct the phases of the building, and then at a certain point that property is completed and you want to lock it into a fixed rate mortgage product for the next 30 years. So you're going from a construction loan to what we call in the industry a permanent loan. So that question, I'm going to have to defer to the specific lender that you're dealing with, because there are as many lenders that do construction loans. That's how many different variations there are on this conversion from construction to the permanent phase. So I would think you'd want to talk to the lender that you're using to get their advice on that.
You know, Steve, we talked before the show about some new disclosures that have come out where there's new requirements for disclosures and telling people ahead of time, et cetera, et cetera. Does that apply to construction loans as well, that Paul would have this question, that he would feel like maybe he doesn't know what's happening?
The old disclosures, if you're in the construction phase, you should have been given documentation that outlines exactly what happens. Now, it's, you know, like we tend to over document in this business and confuse people with lots of paperwork and lots of legal jargon. So you may have missed it, but I think the best thing to do is to walk down, sit down with your lender. And so what we would do in this situation is we would ask you to come into our office so that we could explain it face to face, exactly what's going to happen, exactly what the numbers are going to be, and exactly the timing on this. But you probably do have it in the written form, and you probably signed that document. There are disclosures that we're all required to give you. However, you know, it may not have been
obvious.
Understandable. Yeah.
So, Paul, that might be the first step. Pull out your old paperwork, see if you can find something, and then that'll lead you to a conversation or help you have that conversation with the construction loan lender. Okay, Paul? Thanks for calling in. I appreciate that. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So we have talked about verifying income. We've talked about assets and the reason to verify assets. So the tips tonight so far have been make sure, folks, if you have income, that you're able to document it, not under the table income, and that if you have assets, not under the mattress assets. Okay, so it's all about verification, getting yourself set up, and your record keeping so that you have the information that the lender is going to need from you so that it's timely and that you yourself are not going to hold up that application process because you can't find a bank statement or can't find your pay stub. So kind of get your act together, and it's always good to kind of have this organized ahead of time. Always better to be proactive than reactive, as we say at the end of the show. So Steve, let's move on because we have about 25 minutes left and we want to fit in a lot more. Still taking questions though as well, 610-758-8810. Let's talk about debt. What do we, as you know, future home buyers or people who are refinancing, what do we have to consider for debt?
So we have a golden number, a golden rule in the business, and we like to stay within. It's more of a guideline than a rule, but when we're qualifying you or when we're determining how much of a mortgage you can afford, we add up your total income and then we also add up your total debt. And that debt is your car payments, student loans, credit card debt, and your new mortgage payment. And when we divide all your debt by your income, your debt cannot take up more than 45% of your income. Okay. Now, there are some variations of that, more or less. Like any rule in our business, there's always a second rule or counter rule to it. So, and the guideline for that is basically that if you're using 45% of your debt is being taken up by your income, that means that you should have some money left over for food, a life, a movie. Now, what I do, when I start working with people, I'm very cautious about this number because, quite frankly, if you do the math on that, and if we go back to the beginning of the show, we said we use gross income. We use the number. We use the income before they take the taxes out, before they take the medical insurance out. So, I think the first thing that I think the take home on this is if you're looking to buy a house, you need to figure out what you're comfortable with on your mortgage payment. Don't let the lender tell you what your mortgage payment should be. Why don't you figure it out first and then go to the lender and have a conversation about the mortgage payment. Because sometimes for some people, 45%, if we use the 45% rule, that may be too much. Because there are debts that are not counted in this equation. A car insurance is not counted. Cell phone bills are not counted. Some people, cell phone bills could be a couple $100 a month. Obviously, we're not counting food and utilities and groceries and things like
that.
Can
I ask you a question, too? Because you said you look at the debt that they have, like their credit card debt. Is it the monthly payment?
It's the monthly payment.
So I talked about that a couple weeks ago as far as cash flow and how, or at some point, I don't know when, in a prior show, where we talked about credit cards and how fast you can pay them back and the interest rate. And it might be a $40 payment for someone who's 18 years old. And it might, depending on the interest rate, it could take up till 25 or 36 because the payment could be so low. So there's another reason why, even if you're within that 45% debt ratio,
it may not
be
a good idea to stay by it. You may have deferred student debt that we don't necessarily count. It's not coming due for another year or two, but 2 years from now, you're going to have a $300 student loan debt. So you need to, the consumer needs to factor, prepare for that number.
Yeah.
But you're right. And the credit card debts we're using, if there's a $5,000 credit card balance and you're required to pay $50 a month, we're only using the $50 a month.
So we want listeners to be smart about this. Again, I'm all about making good choices and informed decisions and, you know, to empower them into their future. And it's more than just, you know, having that mortgage and having that great asset that you can build up. But, you know, other things come along when you're going to be a home buyer, like furnishing that home and paying for those utilities that you can't always anticipate what they are, or then a child comes along. One of the things I think, Steve, you and I had talked about when we were preparing for the show is when my husband and I bought our home, we just planned on me always working part-time. And that wasn't the reality. We knew I would probably go full-time at some point, but it made it more affordable for us in the event that anything should happen unforeseen as well. And I'd like people to kind of think about that as well. You don't always have to max it, you know, max out that payment based on your current income. It could be that lower number. That's okay, folks. You don't want to be real estate rich.
And part of this process is what we call pre-qualification. And so, and let me just describe that a little, take a minute to describe that. A pre-qualification is just kind of a very informal, come in the office, sit down, let's put some numbers on paper. If you want, we could pull your credit. We could add that to the equation. You don't have to do that. We look at your income. We throw it into the software, and we kind of can demonstrate, okay, well, look, here's what this payment is for this sales price, and this is the amount of cash that you need. And it kind of gets a new home buyer familiar with the cost, the process, the payment. Too many home buyers put the cart before the horse and are out shopping, committing to a property, and then talking to a lender. I think the best thing to do is talk to a mortgage professional, get the numbers down, because if you know you get your mind set on a $200,000 payment, but the house for $150 or $125 is actually the more affordable payment for you, you know, it's kind of disappointing. You know, so I think it's a good, and that the pre-qualification of any lenders should be free of charge, should be no pressure, just information exchange of payments, dollars, and preparation for the process.
And then again, remember, as Steve had mentioned, part of that educational process is they may give you that number, but it may not be the number you're comfortable with, and it may be a number higher than you need if it's looking at gross income. So you again, this show is trying to educate you on the numbers you're getting, folks, unless you kind of take it to the next step and realize, yeah, that's the number you might qualify for, but in reality, with the additional expenses you might have, or that it's net income, not the gross, it just helps you make a better decision.
With today's rates and today's housing market, you'd be surprised at how affordable, you know, a home is. So there's, you know, you can get a lot of house for the money. You can get a lot more house for the money than in comparison to rental. And I'm not saying that homeownership is necessarily the right way to go versus renting. There are people that should rent if they're, you know, if they need temporary housing, they plan on relocating, they should be renters. But if, you know, you're planning on being in this area, you know, more than 5 years, homeownership is probably much, much better deal than a rental payment.
Well, let's talk about the fourth piece of the approval process, and then let's talk about what's going on in the market, because you kind of had pulled some numbers, and I'd like to talk about that as well. So the fourth piece of the mortgage approval process is you are looking at folks' credit as well. So talk to us a little bit about how much good credit matters. Does it matter in the interest rates that we're eligible for? And does it matter in the whole loan application process?
Yes, yes, and yes. This is probably the biggest pieces of the mortgage qualification process. And we are quite literally basing our decisions on a three-digit number, your credit score. And there's so many myths and misconceptions about credit scoring. So I want to clear up a couple right now. First, there are different types of credit. There are different credit scores for different industries. So if you're watching TV and they're telling you to go to FICO.com and get your credit score free once a year, you're gonna go to that website, you're going to get a credit score, but that credit score is going to be different than if a mortgage lender pulls your credit. mortgage, and so there might be only one FICO score, but FICO has different formulas for each individual industry. So I can go to a mortgage lender and get a credit score. I could go to an auto dealership and get a FICO score that's different. I could go to Best Buy's and get a FICO score that's different. So each industry tells the credit reporting agency what they feel is important to them. So we may put more emphasis, our industry may put more emphasis on installment debts, how you've paid your previous mortgage, whereas a auto industry may look at maybe income and, you know, how your revolving debt and can you have you managed, you know, maybe a little, being a little more liberal. So it's important if you're going for a mortgage, if you're looking for a home buyer, you want to get a mortgage credit report, and you could do that through any lender. The second thing about credit is that there are standards. The industry is hovering right now between 620 and 640. So if your credit score is not above that number, you may have difficulty obtaining a mortgage loan. The other thing that we implemented in the industry about 5 to 7 years ago is what we call risk-based pricing. And risk-based pricing is saying that two individuals apply for a mortgage. The person who gets who has a higher credit score should get a better interest rate than the person who has a lower credit score. And it's scaled. So from 640, I believe, to 680 is one phase, from 680 to 740 and then 740 and above. So you could potentially, your rate could potentially be based off of your credit score. Now, if you're in a government, there's certain programs that do not use that risk-based pricing. I don't want, and everything that I say tonight, there's probably an exception to the rule, but if you're getting a conventional loan, 5 or 20% down, the higher the credit score, the better the interest rate you're going to be able to obtain.
Okay. We're going to take our last break, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're tuned to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. This is Your Financial Choices. Currently 80 degrees out there. Tonight, a 50% chance of showers, low around 65. Tomorrow, Thursday, a 60% chance of showers, mainly before 11 a.m., cloudy with a high near 75. Thursday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, low around 62. For Friday, a warmer day, slight chance of showers, thunderstorms after 11 a.m., mostly sunny with a high near 83. Friday night, a low of 54. For Saturday, a little bit cooler, high of 77, with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Sunday, a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms, could have some heavy rain, mostly cloudy, with a high near 80 degrees. Now we return to Your Financial Choices and Lori Siebert.
Thanks, John. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. There are a few things I want to make sure that we get to. And maybe I could just give you some really fast questions, Steve, so that we can get a couple things answered. And then I want to make sure we cover HARP. And I want to give you an opportunity to talk about some of the stats that you've seen recently in the Lehigh Valley, because I always think that's interesting as well. So when we've been talking about the mortgage approval process tonight, this also, you know, more in the context of new home buyers. But it also applies to refinancing as well, correct?
Correct.
With the verifying the income, the assets, and blah, 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 and the credit ratings. So better credit. The tip there, folks, is pay your bills on time, Steve said, and, you know, establish some credit. So make sure that you have good credit going forward to help you in the eventual home purchasing process. Kind of an overall tips we've talked about is making sure that you have the income documented, make sure you have your assets, you know, documented as well, and controlling your debt to income ratio. So tips for people coming out of high school, college, try to take care of your debts. Don't incur more debt than you need to. Try to be forward thinking, because life goes so fast. You're going to be wanting to purchase a home before you know it. So you don't want to, you know, start in your 20s with, you know, excess student loans or fancy car loans and things like that. So from a young age, kind of monitor this, right, Steve?
Exactly.
You know, you can start doing things early. We had talked before the show about first jobs, learning to manage money, then managing student debt in college, all as ways to kind of build up this process toward adulthood when you want to purchase homes. The HARP. Now, I had a gentleman call, I think it was Ed, from a couple weeks ago about the HARP loan, refinance project. I don't know what it was called, but I know there's a website called harp.gov. And I know that I read, it said that for folks who may not have qualified for this in the past, maybe they need to try again. Do you have a recap of what
sure.
the HARP is?
I think the best thing to do is to give you a little bit of a history of how the HARP was developed. So in our industry, to refinance your home, you traditionally needed at least 20% equity, which means that you can only borrow up to 80% of the value of the home. So that means that if you purchased a home for $100,000 and you borrowed at that time $80,000, you had 20% equity in your house. Now let's fast forward and let's just say that your home depreciated, it went down in value, and now your home's only worth $80,000. You owe $80,000, your home's worth $80,000. So you have no equity in your house. But all you want to do is take advantage, you want to refinance, and all you want to do is take advantage of the lower interest rate. Well, our industry guidelines wouldn't allow that to happen because there was no equity. So the government said, look, banks, you got to fix this. This is not a good plan. We got a lot of people out there that are underwater on their home, they have no equity, but they could benefit by getting a lower payment. So the HARP program was developed to help that individual. Person, so the spirit of the loan is that you can refinance, get a lower payment, if you don't have any equity in your home. Now, it has some restrictions. You can't walk away with money. You can't, you know, cash out, what we call in the industry, and the general purpose has to be to reduce your payment reduction. Where the HARP program was, and just about every lender offers this program, and you could usually borrow up to maybe 125 or 150% of your home's value if you're underwater. Now, where the program got kind of stalled was that some people, in addition to having their first mortgage, had a second mortgage, and that second lender was involved because they had a lien against the house. So even though the first lender would agree to use the HARP program to refinance your house, the second lender may not. Now, things have changed. The government stepped in and started saying, look, the second lender guys, you've got to be more amicable to this program, and you know, you're not going to get anything anyway if this goes into foreclosure. So, you know, buckle up and you know, get with the program and let these people refinance. So the program has become a little more user-friendly. More lenders have bought into it, and it's available. It's a good program if you don't have any equity,
and you're current on your payments.
And you're current, yes. You have to be current on your payments. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So good, Ed. I hope that helped. And there's more information available as well on harp.gov as to further, you know, qualifications for that. So we can't cover everything on the show tonight, but Steve, as we talked about home values going down, can you tell us what's been happening recently?
Well, the good news is that home values are going back up. So in comparison to last year at this time, prices have increased almost 6%. We have sold more homes, 10% more homes have closed this year in comparison to last year at this point. So that's good news and bad news depending on which side of the fence you're on. If you're a seller, that's great news. Homes are selling faster. They're selling at market prices. If you're a buyer, that means that the seller, you may not be able to get as much off on that house as you thought you were going to. So we're actually turning the corner, and we've seen a lot more activity in the last 4 or 5 months, a lot more buyers out there looking. Now, the inventory is not keeping pace with the demand once more, so that makes it more of a seller's market. So if you're a buyer, this would be a great time to get in. The interest rates are low. We're just approaching the seller's market, so you're still going to get a discount. The average discount tracked by the Lehigh Valley Association of Realtors is about 5% on a property. So meaning if it was listed for $100,000, that home sold for $95,000 on average.
So if I was in the market for a home and I saw it listed for $100,000, I could go in maybe throw in a bid at 95.
At about a 5% discount, you're probably going to get it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we see that trend going up right now.
That trend's going up in the seller's favor. So now, okay, you know, it used to, you know, maybe a year or two ago, you could get 10-15%, and you know that seller may be willing to negotiate because their houses were sitting on the market a little bit longer, and that seems to be going away. And we're seeing multiple offer situations. So houses that are priced right and are in decent shape, you see multiple offer situations where there's two and three bids going in at the same time. You kind of get in that bidding war like we saw back in 05 to 07, and that drives up the price a little bit. So one of the misconceptions is I could go out and get half off the retail or the sales price of the property. I can negotiate it down 20-30%, and I don't think you may be able to do that on a fixer upper or something that's where there's not a lot of demand on it, but that's going away, seems to be going away quickly.
Okay. There was another question I had, and now I just I lost it. The mortgage approval process. How long does that take? So if someone's thinking about getting in the market, they've listened to the show, they've done all they've taken all of our tips, they've made sure they could account for their income, they have all their pay stubs, they have their W-2s, they have their assets, they mm-hmm. have everything documented. They went in and met with a mortgage lender to get an idea of what they could afford, mm-hmm. and then they started shopping. So they kind of did some pre-work for that. They start shopping. They say, you know what, I can afford a $150,000 house. They start looking. Maybe they look at one that's $160,000, and in this market, they go in and want to put in a bid for $150,000. Mm-hmm. At what point do they come see the mortgage lender again? Mm-hmm. And then what is that process?
Okay, so the process would be that we would give you wanted to make an offer on that $160,000 house. It's tradition in our area, customary, that with that offer goes what's called a pre-approval letter. So my company prepares a pre-approval letter that goes along with that offer, and that tells the seller that Joe Smith has been pre-approved to get financing should you choose to sell this house to him.
Okay.
All right, so the seller has that confidence level that they've already been through that process with the lender, and they know that, in fact, if this deal consummates, they're going to be able to get the financing they need to buy the house. So from that point, if the seller accepts the offer, an agreement is signed, and that's when you apply for the mortgage, and we start the formal verification process. And that process, from until we actually give you a formal letter of writing that commits us to giving you the money, that process, our goal is to do it in 15 days, but that's going to vary from lender to lender. So we want to take you from application to fully approved. That and fully approved meaning that we've verified your income, your assets, your debts, and everything.
Okay.
In about 15 days.
So again, then, if you, as the consumer, have a lot of that information available, that helps that whole process
Absolutely.
Go a lot faster. We have a couple minutes left. Anything you want to add at the end here?
Thank you for the opportunity. And there's a lot that we didn't cover, so I would suggest that if anybody's considering buying a house, talk to a go through the pre-qualification process. Talk to a lender and sit down and have a very informal conversation about payments and cost and products and mortgages, and then go out and find that, go start looking for that house.
Oh, one other question I had. Mm-hmm. Would this also apply for investment property? I know that sometimes the interest rates are a little bit different
yes.
if it's investment property or commercial.
So the documentation process is the same. The guidelines are a little more conservative. We're looking for a little more money down, and the interest rate's a little bit different, a little bit higher on the investment property.
Okay. Folks, I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. Steve, I really appreciate you being here. Steve Stelzman from The Mortgage Company. How do people contact you or get more information?
You could Google us at The Mortgage Company or Steve Stelzman. That's probably the best way in today's electronic world. Just Google The Mortgage Company, Allentown The Mortgage Company, and we'll pop right up there.
Okay. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
I appreciate it. I think I talked to Steve before the show about different kinds of mortgages that we can get too. So I'm hoping we can get him back in the fall to talk about the differences between 30-year mortgages, 15-year VA loans, FHA, government loans,
first-time homebuyer programs.
Right, all different kinds of programs. So we want to bring him on to talk about that. But I really thank you for being here. I think it was quite informative. Lots of great tips. And folks, if you want to catch the show later, you can always listen to podcasts, which are available on WDIY.org or yourfinancialchoices.com. Thank you, listeners, for calling in. Thank you, Judy Ann, for taking the calls. Thank you, John. Thanks again, Steve. Next week, the elements of financial planning. Are you missing out? Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.